Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us.
Hey, everybody. This is the first podcast.
First of all, first.
Yeah.
This the is very, very first.
Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling with Richie Byrne and Mark Riccadonna. And as always, we have with us Soul Joe
Richardson, the one, the only.
Richardson.
How are you, fellas?
That's why Joel went into producing.
Yes,
right there. Did you hear that? That's how he was on stage. How are you people? Thanks for coming.
So anybody who's
and now Richie Byrne.
he warmed him up for you.
I'm gonna do a tight two. Don't go anywhere.
Tight two.
I think I'm the only comic in history who that's my claim to fame is I can do the least amount of time.
Really?
I can go up and when I'm hosting, if they're like show's running late, we gotta keep tight. I'm like, I'll do three.
Well, I know I'm pretty well known. Well, I'm not pretty well known. But
we should actually talk about this. For anybody who's tuning in that doesn't know us, we should probably introduce ourselves.
Right. Richie, okay. I am Richie Byrne. I've been a stand-up comedian for like a few years.
Yeah. He's rather new at this. are you itching on 30?
Yeah.
You're about at 30?
Yeah. I mean, technically, I started in 88, but only did a few and
didn't
really
count.
It really took in 91. And you know, so I've been doing comedy 27 years, pretty much 28 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, dude. And it goes fast.
I know.
Right.
I'm at 15 years
I
and
know.
I still feel like I'm the new Jack.
I know. It just all of a sudden one day you're like, there's so many years and you know this, and then we'll get to introducing you where you're like, oh, I wish I was doing it longer. You see a guy when you're first starting out who's really good. You're like, oh, man, I'll never get to be that good. And then and you're like, wow, that guy's been doing it 15 years. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then one day you go, oh, I'm up at 22 now. How did that happen? You know, like
exactly.
It's that quick.
Oh, my God.
You know?
One of the things that we always talk about is how people use comedy to get into other things, whether it's TV, film.
The ultimate lily pad. When you're on this lily pad, you can jump any direction
to
a job. Producing, directing, acting,
ballet.
Writing.
And
ballet
Richie,
for Richie.
Richie's done that by doing the warm-up for Dr. Oz, where he can make a living out of it, and then he still does his gigs on the weekend. But I wanted to go backwards.
I should have mentioned that I do the warm-up for Dr. Oz. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. But you're one of the people that actually got into comedy through other channels.
Yeah.
Because you went to the number one theater school in America, Wagner. Staten Island.
Yeah, okay. I did. I don't know if it's the number one theater school in America.
Now it is. Not at the time you went there.
I went to the oldest
Soul
acting school
your
in America.
Producer.
Which is
the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
He's so happy he just got me. You see how happy he is? Well, I'll tell you a story. Joel went to Wagner College, too. We both went to Wagner College. Did you know that?
No, yeah. I did not.
And
now I see why you team up against me all the time.
When I first worked for him, he said, don't you remember we met? We could tell how we met. I went to Wagner like you. So he was hosting the show, and he goes, how do you want me to bring you up? I go, say this is the funniest comedian to ever come out of Wagner College.
Except Richie didn't laugh after he said it and just stared at me, and I go,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. And he goes, or whatever you want.
And the host of hosts right here is Mark Riccadonna.
Yes. I actually went to the oldest theater school in America. American
Academy
of
Dramatic
Arts. And Don Rickles was an alumni.
Yes, he was. They've amazing amount of people.
I mean, there's Robert Redford, Jason Robards.
I actually looked into going there. I remember applying and stuff. I was over back then when I was like 18, 19 years old, I was too. Everything was overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
Like, I give you a lot of credit because to me it was.
And I'm from Ohio.
Yeah.
So I had to come to New York.
I'm from New York.
Had to come all the way here to audition.
Yeah.
To get into the school. I was shitting my pants.
Yeah, I can't imagine, dude. But, seriously.
I ended up doing the acting thing and then worked at a comedy club.
But did you always want to be a comic? Was that
there was part of me that always wanted to be a comedian, but here's the thing. I didn't know it was a thing you could do. Like, I knew there were people that were comedians, but I assumed like it was like royalty, like you had to be born into it
right.
or something.
See, I never that's which I think was the point Joe was making earlier. I'm one of the few guys I know who people go, how'd you know you want to get into comedy? You always hear guys, well, I was 8. And I heard Eddie Murphy or I heard Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
I never had any interest in being.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I still don't.
Yeah. And there are audience members who will tell you that yeah. I still don't.
Well, I think that's what you two have in common.
Maybe that yeah. we have more. I mean, and we were in
the theater background.
Yeah, the theater background.
Getting into that first before comedy and not really ever having that as an end game.
Yeah. What's weird is comedy was a thing that I worked at a comedy club, and like I thought, yeah, that's great. Like I would love to do it. It looks like
stand up, right? Is that the first? Because that's where I met you.
Yes.
Because I said to him, I go, I feel like you've been around since I started. And he's like, that's because I was working the kitchen at Stand Up New York. I'm like, oh, right.
I worked at Stand Up New York since like 99.
Yeah.
You also have food in common.
Yeah, well, there's that. but like, it was a whole thing of like, I mean, I love theater. And one of the main reasons I wanted to get into acting is when I was in school, high school, and they said, well, what do you want to do when you get older? What do you see yourself doing? And I kind of was like, well, I could see myself doing everything. I could yeah. be a cop. I could be a, you know, a Wall Street guy. I could be a, and then it was. I realized acting, you get to be all those.
Yeah.
So like it was a thing.
I just always wanted to perform. I love performing. I didn't think I could write. So you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And when I got into college, I always did like the comedy roles and stuff. And I had teachers, professors were saying you should do stand up. Anything you can do. To get into the business,
yeah.
To get into the entertainment business, you know.
Once you get your
and I'm like,
in.
Well, I can't write my own material. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I just, you know, and then when I got done at college, I was doing a lot of regional theater and tours, and people, even on those tours, people were like, dude, you got to do comedy, man. You're funny, yeah. You know. And then I just kind of started going open mics in the city.
That's the way to,
you know, and people don't realize that how hard it really is. And especially today, like I love when someone asks me, how do you get into comedy? I'm like, it's far different now than it was in 1990 yeah. when I started. So I'm not the guy to ask. Well,
and I don't mean to like make it a punchline, but when a young guy asks me, they'll be like, how do I get into comedy? And I look at them and I'm serious. I don't know.
I don't know.
I have no idea how you get into it.
No.
I know my story.
Right.
But I don't think it's the conventional story.
Right.
And I don't think
there's
any
no blueprint.
Comedian. Yeah, there's no formula to getting in it, which is what's kind of weird because you talk to comics and you know, we all have these conversations in the green room and nobody's story makes sense that it was like a like well thought out plan. It was always like ending up on an accident, on a dare, on a thing. This happened, that happened, next thing.
Right.
You know, it's the slowest progression
right.
to moving up. Like I always also talk to young comics and they go, when do I start getting paid? I don't know. When
I don't,
do you start getting paid?
I don't know what to tell
like,
you.
I have no
I mean,
idea.
You got to realize 3 years in, I was doing TV shows.
That's fantastic.
I did stand-up Spotlight for VH1. I did stand-up for Comedy Central. I mean, 3-4 years in.
Wow.
But back then, there were a lot more shows on the air. You know, there were so you could. And then in 98, I did Rosie O'Donnell. I did my first national 10 years in.
Wow.
Less than 10 years in.
Wow.
So looking at it at the time, it didn't seem that impressive. Looking at it 20 years later, I'm like, well, nobody does that.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody gets that. It's so weird. Either you get it all a year in or you get it all 30 years in. Like you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no in between in comedy anymore.
Yeah, my situation was because I worked at the comedy club and I was dealing with people who booked late night shows, dealing with the people who booked comedy festivals, dealing with I was always around it, and it's like you said that you felt like I was always around.
Yeah.
I've never auditioned for a TV show, for
think about
a festival. I've never auditioned for one thing ever, And everybody assumes that I already have done them.
Right.
I haven't been in, I've never done.
You're the most, I will say, comics know more about what's going on in comedy than bookers because they're there.
Yeah, yeah, they're in the trenches.
Like,
yeah.
I get a kick, and I don't mean that as a knock to anybody, but it's the truth. Most bookers don't really, there's the old school of bookers showing up at clubs at night. Where? I don't see them. Yeah.
Right, as when opposed to me that I never leave the room.
You're a very rare case. Right. Yeah, and which is why you're going to go far.
Right.
But comics know more about comedy than, it sounds stupid, but it's the truth that, and every comic in the world knows Mark Riccadonna. Like, it's amazing. Yeah.
Can't believe, I'll be completely honest, I can't believe that people...
Everybody knows you.
Yeah.
Everybody.
And according to them, he's their best friend.
I'm the nicest guy. And I have idea.
And I'm the opposite. Like, I mean...
I hate me, which is why we get along.
I hate you. I have a resume that I think is pretty impressive, and nobody knows me. You know, like people go, hey, Richie Burton, who's that?
Well, or you might get, Richie's really funny, but I don't know him that well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
probably they
haven't, like,
but I just think it's interesting because you're right. You haven't done anything.
I know. I'm like,
and
the
yet
most
you're
jaded.
The most respected comic that I know. Seriously. It's Thank odd. You, it's odd. Like, nobody goes, you know who we need for this? Mark Riccadonna. No, no. They never say, like,
they
but
never
meanwhile,
do that.
Comics are like, Mark Riccadonna. Oh, he's great. I love
yeah,
Mark Riccadonna.
I, as far as, like, comedians and, like, if I walk into a club, like, it's funny.
Dude, watching you in a club when we were going to the strip a lot back when we were doing, I was in a play 2 years ago, and Mark directed it. And we were rehearsing at the strip, at the comic strip. He was the king. He was the king, man. No matter who came, like Seinfeld walked in and went, Riccadonna is here. You know what I mean?
But nobody.
He's with that fat guy that no one knows. That's Richie Byrne. Oh, is that Richie Byrne?
I heard its name before. It's a weird thing. I never auditioned for any of these shows. I do the festivals with the guys that I'm friends with, but I've never, like, participated in the festival. I'm always at them or hosting
right.
the shows for people or doing that kind
right,
of thing.
Right, right.
And I know all the people who book all the major shows. They've never once put me on a showcase. So it's like, maybe people like me. They just hate my act.
No, because that's, I mean, it's, you have a great act. I mean, there's not, it is odd. It's very odd.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, earlier when you guys were saying that people come up to you and ask them how to get into stand-up comedy. I think it's because you both make it look so effortless. Despite whatever situation's going on, the crowd or other comics on the show.
Richie handles adverse situations
every day.
Better than I've ever seen any comic on the planet.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah. The craziest things on the planet could be happening in the showroom, and you just, like,
and
take
the hardest thing for me when I by far was breaking script when I started. Yeah. The hardest thing for me was
improv.
Yeah, any yeah. yeah, and I even
Which
had
is funny because that's what you're known for.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so weird. I even Tim Davis, who was a
stand-up New York.
Yeah, he said that to
I
me
worked
when
for
I
for him. I mean, set people.
Tim, he. But I remember him saying to me when he first met me, he goes, "You're an actor, aren't you?" And I go, "Yeah." I go, "Why'd you know that?" He goes, "Because you know how to find the light instinctively. You know when you're not in a light. You know how to." He said, "And you do not break from your act for anything." Yeah. He's like, a person could have a heart attack and die, and you'd be like, "So my mother," yeah. like you wouldn't know how.
An actor, by definition, one who acts.
Yeah.
That's how I knew.
But he made me realize that early on. I always remember going, "I'm not good with an audience. I'm not good with an audience." And it's ironic that now I do warm up, which is all about audience.
27 years later.
Yeah, it only took me 22.
Well, and what's weird is I think it's from the acting background. When I do crowd work, which my wife always says, you should do more crowd work. Like, you're really good at it because I never make people the butt of the joke.
Right.
I always make it about me.
Right.
So, like, people can be comfortable talking to me when I'm on stage. But what's weird is because of, I think, the acting background, when I start talking to someone, I immediately can feel their vibe of not wanting to talk. And I'm so not afraid as in like I shouldn't be do this, but I'm so cautious.
No, and I'll tell you why.
Of it, that it's like,
because you're a good
guy. I
don't
want to make you feel uncomfortable, so we'll also stop talking.
I've noticed, I've seen comics go out into an audience and the person is uncomfortable, and all it does is make the whole audience uncomfortable.
They feel
yeah.
it.
And that's so like you're feeling that vibe too.
Yeah.
And some comics love that, but because they're assholes. In all fairness.
They thrive in that.
They thrive
kind of
on, yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of guys are comics because they're assholes.
I say that. Well, it's funny. I say that all the time to other comics that a couple audience members have said this to me, that it's not that you're psychic, but you're empathic, where you feed off that energy of a crowd, like whether you're guessing an occupation yeah. or an audience member. And I think most comics do sense that, unless they're sociopaths. And there's a few of those in the business, too.
Yeah, right.
I think you feed off that energy.
Maybe. I actually, the other
vibes. You called it vibes.
I had a kid the other night at the show this past Saturday.
It was 5 days ago.
He went into a diabetic seizure.
What?
Okay.
Oh, my God.
And I'm on stage. All of a sudden, I'm like, this kid's like, I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, he's diabetic. Like,
did you get to do the dream? Get to go, is there a doctor in the house?
Yes.
You got to do that. Oh,
I did. I said, is there a woman?
Trying to save his life, you're calling it the dream?
And
I've always wanted to do it. I always wanted to go. Is there a doctor in the house?
Oh, I did. Yeah. I did. And it was funny because one woman from the audience kept yelling out, is this high? Is this blood? Is this sugar high or low? Is it high? And I'm going, and the kid's having a seizure and they're like trying to get him out. And she's going, is it high or low? And I'm like, are you a doctor? She goes, no. I go, are you a nurse? She goes, no. I go, then shut the fuck up. And the place went crazy.
D, none of the above.
Richie, even finding comedy during somebody's death. Yeah.
Oh, that's so
I
funny.
Once came off the stage at the Borgata, and they were working on a guy right there. Yo, cause
oh, my God.
I don't know if he had a heart. I don't know. I don't know if I should have said Borgata, but... I mean, they weren't. It wasn't them. It was them.
No, but I just they thought, had somebody working on it. It's better than when I thought, came out. I thought, there was a dead body.
Yeah, and I thought, wow, the show must go on. I guess nobody.
I think the show must go on was invented by needy comedians who. No, the show must go on. What? But the guy just died.
Yeah, that yeah, and.
But do I get paid if we don't do the show?
Didn't anybody light me? Yeah, 14 times.
Well, you know what they say. The show must go on.
Yeah, the show must go on.
Do I still get paid? Yes. Oh, the show doesn't have to go on.
There is a comedy club owner who would pay you in full, even if there was no show.
Oh, and, Jesus.
I used to, I'm not going to say who, but I used to race on a Wednesday. You'd race to that club. Because you knew there was a good chance no one was coming, and you knew you were getting paid. And I'm like, nobody tell him that normally you don't get paid in full. Like, some, you know what I mean?
Some ass probably did.
Probably.
You
don't
have to pay me. The other clubs don't.
Why did you race? Just because you didn't.
Because you're already there. You're getting paid.
And I love when they go, hey, man, I'm sorry. There's no show. And you're like, oh, all right. Meanwhile, you're thrilled that there's no show. I don't care. I'm never one of these guys who has to perform.
Right.
It's not my, I like performing. But if I don't have to and you want to pay me,
yeah.
I'm fine with that, too.
You're also the only headliner that all goes, oh, the feature's going long? No problem. I'll take it out of my time.
Kevin Downey Jr. has the greatest saying, and I adopted it. It is, what's the least amount of time I can do and still get paid?
Yeah. He's right. I never understand. That's what I was going to say earlier. Is like I now have a reputation among other comics. They're like, wow, you never go over your time. Mm. And I'm like, what? The other night, I looked at my watch, and a guy goes, why are you looking at your watch from the audience? And I go, because I'm not going a second over my time. And he goes, why? You're doing great. I go, do you work for free? When it's time for you to go home from work,
you don't get overtime.
You
stick around.
Yeah, are you staying and going? You know what? I'm really enjoying that. I got to tell you, people, that as much as we're having fun up here, I'm still working.
Yeah. And my happy hour starts now.
Have a wife at home and a beer over at that bar.
Stop looking at your watch. Shut up. I go, you never look at your watch at work? Seriously, you never look at your watch at work.
I never thought about it from that perspective. Because I don't like to light the guys, too, because I'm having fun. And then they put it in this perspective. They're like,
Yeah, I it's did overtime. Yeah. You're I doing did a show. I'm guilty of it. Like, if I'm on a roll and I'm doing new stuff or, like, things are just flowing, all of a sudden I'll get off stage.
I don't,
and I'll
new
like,
stuff? New stuff.
See, Richie, some comics have notebooks, and we write jokes. And
I'm up there going, so how about this George Bush?
Senior,
yeah. W? Who's W? Yeah.
Do you think one of his kids might run? I have a question. So since we kind of know we're getting to know who we are.
Right. And, this is so not really the show.
No, this is the introduction. We're trying to getting right. to know us.
Right.
What's your take on swearing, cursing, whatever on stage?
I have no problem with it. I don't, and I do it.
Yeah.
You do it at times, right?
Yeah, if it's appropriate or depending. I describe it like this. It's like if you're telling the same joke, you're telling a street joke, and you're telling it to your grandmother or you're telling it to your best friend. You're going to tell the same joke, but you're going to tell a little differently.
Yeah.
So it depends what I'm in front of. In front of an older audience or conservative audience, I tend to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a problem with the whole.
Swearing for no reason.
Yeah. And the whole idea that it's an art. Like these, you know what I mean? Like young guy, hey, no one's going to tell me how to do my show. Shut up. Shut up.
The guy writing the check can tell you exactly how to do it.
And to me, that bothers. It's like, no. You know, you want to be an artist, go hang at the Cellar till 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then you go up to the three people that are left, say what you want. But here you're getting paid. It's a fundraiser.
Yeah.
You know, do what they ask you. You know, yeah. I've always found, and I feel you're the same way, that I can, if I have to get blue to get an audience, I'll get blue to get an audience.
Yeah.
But I'd prefer not to. Yeah. And I'll tell you a story. I did hence it is a storytelling show, so I'm going to tell you a story. I did a show years ago, and it was a fundraiser for a Catholic school. And
Catholic school.
And
this is where you hit the bell. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. So round Joel one. Loves the story. So it's at the school. It's at the school. It's in the cafeteria of the school. And that's the other thing people don't realize. Like, people are like, well, you're playing a cafeteria at a school, don't you? No, I got paid a lot more than I did when I played
the basement, you know, of a bar, you know, on the Lower East Side.
Or even a theater. Or, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's, I will go wherever you're willing to pay me.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the other thing with comics. It's like, oh, don't you feel degraded? No, pay me.
Yeah, pay me. There's two thoughts of comedy, I feel. I don't want to take away from the story.
No, you're not.
There's two thoughts of comedy. One is the person who sees it as our job to entertain the audience. Whatever's in front of us, we go up and entertain them. There's another group who think they're doing basically philosophy, and if you don't like it, don't come to my show.
Right.
And I think both are completely valid.
Absolutely.
Completely valid.
I couldn't agree more.
But the philosopher types shouldn't try to work the road.
Right.
Because when you work outside of your domain, if you're working clubs in the city where people are just coming because it's a comedy club, so people are expecting anything, you can work there. But like when you go out and they're raising money for a fire department, people really don't want to hear your intellectual thoughts on religion. Right. They want to raise a couple bucks to get a new fire truck, and they want to laugh and forget
about
the
problems. It's still entertainment.
Yeah. Are you an entertainer or are you an artist? And you can be both.
You can be both. You just got to know when to be which.
Exactly.
I always made this point with comics because as a producer, I have a different perspective, obviously, but it's the same the one that you hold and that you just said. But a lot of comics in the beginning, when I first started doing it, because I do a lot of fundraisers, it's over half my business.
Yeah.
A lot of the comics didn't want to conform to those restrictions.
Yeah.
But I had to tell him, like, listen, you're not Dave Attell. You're not Louis C.K.
Well, that's the thing.
Those audiences are coming out because they know their brand. They know what they're getting. And when I would throw Bob Levy on the bill, whoo, you know, people would start walking.
It's right.
And it's no disrespect to Bob or Otto and George and those guys. It's because if they're not advertised properly,
right.
You don't know what they're getting.
Right. Well, and that was when I was at Stand Up New York. I used to always get these guys, and they would say, like, well, you don't tell Jim Norton to not swear. You don't tell Dave Attell to not swear. And it's like, well, you're not Jim Norton or Dave Attell.
Right.
Like, get really famous and good, and you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Right, to the point where they're not bringing their own name at the Cellar.
Yeah.
Before it's underneath aliases.
But what we were talking... I had a
Catholic school.
No,
Catholic
I know. School. I know, but there's something with that point of... There, yeah, I don't have a problem with cursing. I don't have a problem, but I understand that certain groups, certain people do.
Yeah.
You know, and I walk in, and I don't want somebody in front of me who's incredibly blue. All the time. You know, where am I supposed to go? Thank you for...
Once
you know,
that monster's loose in the room, in the theater... Yeah. It doesn't go away.
Right.
Once somebody drops a...
Right.
Yeah. Drops something, so, it's there forever.
So, I'm doing this fundraiser for this Catholic school. I mean, the church is connected to the cafeteria.
The other side of those bricks is the altar.
The church, yes. Yes. And I get there, and the comic I'm working
with... When they're bringing out the rigatoni, they have to move the body and blood of Christ.
Yes, exactly. The rigatoni. So...
Mark Riccadonna.
So I get there, and the comic I'm working with is younger, and he's scared, and he says, did they say anything about being clean? And I go, no. He goes... No one, did they mention to you that you had to be clean? And I go, no, but there's a cross right here. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, no, because no one told me, you know, I only have like 10 minutes.
Check
clean.
Your environment. Yeah. And just assume.
And, and he's like,
a biker
he's
club, like, you can probably do whatever you want.
Right, right. And he's like, oh, man. So we go in. Dude, there's nuns in the audience. There were nuns. The principal was a nun.
Ooh.
So... We walk in, and this woman comes up to us, this blonde woman. It was a woman who was booking the show. It was a woman who set the show up. Really? Did you just go to sleep on me, Riccadonna? What are you doing?
No.
Riccadonna got a text, and suddenly my story sucks.
Hey, it's radio. Nobody knew I looked down.
I know, but it was driving me crazy. So
he looked left.
We walk
right.
in the door, and this woman, who we think is the woman in charge, comes up, and she's like... You guys must be the comics. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so excited.
Oh,
we're
I
like,
love
Thank
that.
Thank you. And he goes, she goes, we are just thrilled. We can't wait, blah, blah, blah. And he says to her, okay, is there a language cutoff? Like, is it PG? Is it R? She goes, triple X.
Wow.
And he goes,
Which
what?
Which is the exact opposite impression.
And triple X. We are very open-minded here. Whatever you want to say. As she's saying that, her husband comes up and goes, you guys, man, get as dirty as you want.
I mean, look at Jesus is half naked up there.
And I'm like, and I know that this is getting this guy spurred on. And I know that just because the booker is telling him that, just because the woman doesn't mean the
look
audience
the room,
feels
nuns.
This
they're
way.
A priest. There's a.
So they're like, triple X, whatever you want to say, blah, blah, blah. Dude, he goes up.
You should see the father's mass.
He goes up and says the C word, right, like with it, the first sentence. The C word.
Wow.
Right after hello.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's
just
a way to dive
pretty
in.
Pretty much.
Might as well dive in.
He pretty much, it was like, how you guys doing, cunt?
Cunt.
How you cunts doing tonight? Yeah. So he says it, and you feel the audience just...
Go, what?
And he looks at the
happened.
Nun in the front, and he says, they told me all bets were off. They said I could say cunt.
Wow.
Three times he said it. In the first 2 minutes, he's and it was hell. It was brutal. And they were so mad. And they were mad at him. They were mad at me. But I got him out of it. You know, I did okay.
That
I
is.
Did. So he's in the back, and he's like, remember, we asked if we could curse on this, and we've already thrown the C word out. I think that's hysterical. So...
Yeah, we talked about
we talked about not cursing.
We're like, yeah, let's keep this short. <clean."
laughs> And the first story has the C
word. So I guess you're like your opening act.
So tune in next week when Lisa Lampanelli shows up. So
and iTunes rates us.
This might be the second podcast.
So after the show, he's standing there. We're standing together. And he's a good comic. I'm not knocking the comic. I just think he may... And this other woman comes up, and she's like, hi, I'm Eileen. I'm in charge of the show.
When did I say this?
And he goes, what? She goes, I'm the one who set the show up. I'm the person who booked you guys. And he goes, well, who's the blonde woman? She goes, she's just somebody who... You know, she's got a kid here. She just came to... And he's like, oh... Well, she told me I could curse. And she's like, well, I'm in charge of the show, and I found it appalling. Like, she was livid. Livid. Oh, wow. And he goes, oh, well, she told me I thought it was her, and blah, blah, blah. And so they walk away, and the blonde comes up. She's like, I'm telling you, that was awesome. Everybody's so happy you went for it. And she's telling me, you didn't do enough. Shut up. Go shut the hell up. You know what I mean?
I love it that you're the one that's in trouble.
Shut up. So he says to me, he goes, dude, she said, triple X. She said porn. We could go triple X. And I go, yeah, you're right. She did. And you didn't really pay attention to the surroundings. And that's fine. I go, but let me tell you something, dude. I've watched a lot of porn. They don't even say cunt.
And that's one of the situations where I was saying that. Guy was not one of the empathic ones that was reading the audience.
Right. But he like was, even porn stars, like I'll get naked and bang you, but I'm not saying the C word. Right.
I'll take two penises, but
you
want me to say what?
You want me to say what? Excuse me?
Yeah.
My mother might be watching this.
Right. Back in the 70s.
My mother might be watching.
Back in the 70s, they at least had a little bit of a storyline. They don't go right to the taint.
So that's I mean, do you have anything close to that?
I'm going to say right now, I think this is a perfect spot to wrap up our first episode.
How long have we been on?
31, 32.
Wow.
Perfect time, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
Bye-bye, you cunts. Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.